Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. Happy Advent. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. And every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about epistemology and fake news.
You might have noticed our Advent topics have zero to do with Advent. We're talking a lot of cultural stuff during Advent.
Yeah.
Gambling. We're going to do one on addiction to pain medication coming up in a few weeks.
I'm going to try to tie this conversation today into Christmas.
I'm pretty sure you'll be able to do it. I'm sure you'll do it somehow.
I'm going to try.
What is epistemology? Well, it's a word that means, it refers to how we know what we know. So epistemology is a branch of philosophy that just talks about knowledge. How do we gain knowledge? Where does knowledge come from? What does it mean to know something? There's been a lot written in the past couple of weeks on the sort of prevalence of fake news. And someone tweeted recently, a person that I follow and an academic who I sort of try to pay attention to, said, increasingly, I'm coming to the conclusion that an epistemological crisis brought on by explosion of data is a top story of the election. And he goes on to bullet point things like fake news sites, clickbait, major leaks undermining traditional authority structures. So think of like the WikiLeaks stuff. Illusions that individuals can affect global change by social media. Failure of technology to adequately filter and sort data, especially on social media. Economic incentives for publishers to compete for clicks regardless of the truth. He's saying all of these contribute to sort of this new crisis, and he says it's brought on by the prevalence of information, which is an interesting hypothesis to me, to basically say the easier it is for information to be out there and the more of it, the more prevalence of information that there is, the more that real journalism gets subjugated to just the need to create revenue and whatever will make people click on something. And so if that's hyperbole, if it's downright fake, whatever will get people to sort of read. So here's what happened a couple weeks ago. The Washington Post published an article basically asserting that Russian propaganda helped to spread fake news during the election. The title of the article in Washington Post, Russian propaganda effort helped spread fake news during the election, experts say. And this article claimed over 200 alternative news sites were actually Russian agents spreading fake news. Now, what comes out is that the source, the experts who were saying this, is some mysterious group called Prop or Not, which appears to have existed for mere months.
Huh.
As journalists have dug into this story, they've discovered that the Post failed to contact any of the news outlets mentioned, and that the whole story was basically essentially made up. And so there's been this whole conflagration. That's a big word for fire. It's a big word for fire. There's been a whole conflagration in the sort of journalism industry around this prevalence of fake news and this tendency to publish articles that are just sensational for the sake of drawing readers and pulling in attention. And what happened was this Washington Post article got retweeted and people were like, hey, did you know that the Russians, and so basically this got out all over the country and people were saying, oh gosh, the Russians have influenced the whole news cycle in this election. And then it turns out, actually, that's just not even true. And that's happening more and more. And so I think it's interesting to think about, as Christians living in this world, what does it mean for us to value truth, to seek truth, and to care about truth in a world where increasingly we're confronted with a lack of reliable sources of meaningful truth and reporting on what's going on in the world?
When I was a teacher, I had this rule about research papers. You can't just get information from any website. There has to be a legitimacy to it.
This is my biggest with my kids right now. They're always doing their research on the internet. I'm like, what website are you on right now? Do not quote that website in your paper.
Just Wikipedia,
unless it's reputable.
Wikipedia.
Go get a dictionary, kid.
So I think with the internet, you really can. You can in 5 minutes, you can start a blog and slap any ridiculous amount of information and any basically say anything.
And quote someone somewhere else who says it, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, boom, you're a source, quote unquote source. And so isn't democracy great? Isn't freedom great?
Everyone's a journalist.
Everyone's a journalist. Mm-hmm. So I think there's, I mean, to your point, Bob, I think there's a sense where while I think there's something here that people are taking note of and getting inside, there is also a sense where you know, I mean, there's bad information, there's false websites, there's tabloids. I mean, you go to the grocery store and you walk into the checkout line and there's tabloid magazines there and newspapers that have been spilling fake news.
I saw Michael Jackson holding an alien baby.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Elvis and JFK are, you know, hanging out at a barbecue joint, you know, those kind of things. So this kind of thing is not particularly new, but I think now that the angle and the slant, how it's been directed towards a just crazy election, kind of maybe gives it a little more weightiness or a sense of like, hey, there are some consequences to some of this.
By the way, Chris wanted to title this podcast "Tabloid Epistemology," but we thought that was a little heavy.
Catchy.
That's a little bit long for your feed.
Well, the advent of social media doesn't help this problem.
Not at all.
Because
you can retweet anything.
You can retweet.
You just said
anything.
Advent.
I did. I told you. I was tying it in.
Yeah, oh, I see what you did there.
I keep a counter every time.
But like, yeah, you can retweet something in seconds, and you don't have to read it. So you have no idea if it's reputable or not. You can just read the headline and go, "Oh, Washington Post says Russia, you know, laid down a bunch of propaganda." Boom, retweet, and then you're spreading lies.
So this means that, and this is one of those things where for Christians living in a world like ours, I think we need to feel some ethical obligation upon us here to seek the truth, right? So it used to be in the past, you could sort of say, okay, well, any major news organization, they sort of have journalistic standards they have to follow, and there's a certain sort of like credibility that comes within that world, the journalism world, that they sort of are held accountable to. However, what we've seen in recent years, like the whole Rolling Stone article about the sexual assault at the University of Virginia or Virginia Tech, wherever that was, and that thing going on for months and months before anyone raised their hand and said, okay, we made some stuff up here. Mm-hmm. There's been some major credibility gaps and lapses in the journalistic field that I think have led to this sort of crisis of trust of like, well, if I can't trust Rolling Stone or the Washington Post, what can't like that those used to be like reputable. I might not have agreed with their take on things, but I could know that they were reporting actual news. And so if now I can't trust that, there's this new ethical imperative, I think, for us of like, well, I'm going to have to slow down and pay more attention to what's actually true. And that's probably a really good question for Christians to be forced to ask. What is actually true?
I think it's good for society just in general to ask that question, because society says there is no absolute truth. And so things like this come around and people go, man, if our news isn't truth, what is?
Exactly.
So they're faced to confront their own argument of there is no absolute truth.
Well, and I think they're faced to confront the deep human longing for truth.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And so there's a gospel opportunity here that in a world where nobody knows where the truth is to be found anymore, all the more compelling becomes a scripture that is true and a gospel that's true.
Or to frame it another way, the only thing that is quote unquote truth is the narrative in which I have decided to align with. And so anything that supports the narrative, any facts, quote unquote facts that align with that, that's what matters. Supporting the narrative is what matters. And so there is a sense of kind of that postmodern, there is no absolute truth, but there is a narrative that I need to support.
I was about to go philosophical geek on you and say, Nietzsche sort of saw all this coming. Like, this is just Nietzsche's epistemology worked out in society, which is like when there's no longer any objective standard of truth, what you have is a will to power. So whoever's narrative wins,
yeah,
we have to prop up that narrative. Like, you know, there's no longer a passion for truth. It's now a passion for power, which becomes about reinforcing whatever dominant narrative and story I want to tell. And it's interesting how you see this on both sides of the political aisle. So you have the birthers who like have been promoting the narrative ever since Obama got elected that like he wasn't born in America, right? Even though there's really no data to prove that, it's just like there's still thousands of people that hold to that narrative. Likewise, now you have the people that, you know, that there's whole new narratives about Trump and like, is Trump this kind of person or that kind of person? What's Trump going to do? What's he going to mean? And I guarantee those narratives aren't going away either, right? The narrative that everybody who voted for Trump is a closet racist, or that Trump is actually sort of propped up by Putin and the right, like these things, you know, these aren't going away. These narratives are going to stay with us because that's where power lies in a world where truth has sort of been left behind.
So here's the thought that I have kind of wrestling through this. As when this topic came up, Bob, this was the first thing that I kind of was trying to articulate in my head. And we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about conscience and voting. Living in a democratic system, I know, again, we're not pure democracy, but whatever, but living in a system where choice and freedom, you have a free market, like those are forces and factors that are part of our culture, that how important it becomes to tie virtue to such a culture. Because what happens when you're given freedom without virtue is you have this sort of onslaught of lies and falsehoods, and you have this onslaught of, well, I'm going to just throw out these completely absurd stories, but people are going to eat it up because that's what they want to hear. There's no virtue to say, hey, those are lies, and that those lies will never make it in this media market. That we're media, there's no appetite for that kind of thing. But what we're seeing is there is an appetite for this kind of thing. So it's just intriguing to me that how more and more we see that a lack of virtue, we're our own worst enemies. We can lament this issue of fake news and what it's doing to our journalism and what it's doing to our minds and blah, 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 blah. But start with this, there's an appetite for it. That's the problem, is that we will reinforce this and we're okay with this. And some may argue, well, that's why, you know, you need to censor certain things, or fairness doctrine, or kind of restrict freedom in some ways. And to that, I would say, well, okay, but then what's to stop if you kind of centralize, and this is the argument, you centralize information just into some, you know, a few media organizations, what's to stop them from doing the same thing? So you don't really resolve the problem by minimizing the amount of information. I think it goes back to, are we a virtuous society that will say, well, you know what? I have no appetite for this. So anybody tries it immediately, it is not going to matter.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned the idea of appetite, because I think one of the, if I'm asking myself, how do we right the ship here? How do we move the needle back toward a robust view of truth and caring about facts and reality? That appetite is present as I'm scrolling through my social media feed, right? Like when a headline grabs me, when something somebody's retweeted or posted, I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting, right? And so there is this sort of insatiable appetite for, oh, I want to know about that. I want to read that. That sounds interesting. And so there becomes perhaps this need for us to ask the question, what parts of that appetite are image of God, of just a desire to know and learn about the world, and what parts of that are the effects of the fall, of a sort of an insatiable desire to be in the know. I think C.S. Lewis called it the inner ring, the sort of attraction of the inner ring, of like, I'm in the know. I'm one of the only people that sort of knows this or sees this or gets this. Where does a right curiosity become a compulsion in my consumption of data and information? Because you think about it, like, man, I think about my childhood, like, you got the Omaha World Herald and you had the evening news. That, like, you didn't have a Twitter feed that was updated all day, and you didn't even have at that time cable news. I mean, CNN, I think, was like 1985 or 6 that it came online. So, you know, for most of my childhood, it was just like, well, whatever's in the newspaper is what the news is. You know, it's like, you don't have a 24-hour news cycle. And so there was a beauty to that, because it's sort of like, man, every morning you get the paper and you read what's in the news, and you set it down, and if something crazy happens at 3 o'clock, you're going to find out about it at 7 the next morning when you pick up the paper off your doorstep. You know, nobody's going to be on Facebook tweeting about it.
A couple hours late when you got it.
A couple weeks ago, when that killing spree happened at Ohio State, what did I do? I went straight to Twitter.
Yep.
Because I knew that's where I was going to find my news.
Yep.
Because I knew Omaha.com wasn't going to have anything on it, and I just knew where to go. And like, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, I did the same thing. You know what was interesting too is the facts were all different. Like, seven people are injured, nine people shot.
Shooting.
Like, you're just like, well, what happened? Yeah. I mean, I still don't really know. Some people got hurt.
Yep.
I'm not sure how many or where they're at.
And there's no thought given to the discrepancy. It's like, okay, let's just vomit a bunch of information and then we'll clean it up in the end. And then, but
because you got to have the scoop to get people to go, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we don't
exactly.
need, who cares about what's bright? We just need to get the news out because that'll get people to our site.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, bringing up the cable news, this is also where news started to shift and blend with entertainment. And so it became not just, hey, we want to get the facts right. Let's sit down as a family, watch the news, see what's going on, be informed. It's now we got to entertain you. We got to keep you locked in. You have to have fun. It has to be, you know, shake it up. And so that's just a different set of assumptions, a different engaging a different part of the brain. And so that just opens the door for, not to say that the news shouldn't be delivered with a you know, interest and even in a way that catches my attention. But when you start dipping into those two things, you have to make some decisions about how you're going to deliver the news.
Okay, so let me, just as a sort of like an aside libertarian / conservative point, I think this is one argument for paying for your news. This is why I think it's important to subscribe to periodicals to fund agencies that the way they make their dollars is not by competing for your advertising revenue, you know what I mean? But by nonprofits and publicly funded outlets and privately funded outlets, that primarily their funding model is based on contributions. Because not that they're free from bias or free from fake news, but they don't have the inertia that, you know, for a free news website, right? CNN.com. The only way they can get my traffic is they pull me in somehow with a headline or with a story or they have a scoop or right? That's the only way I'm going to go there is if they have something compelling. Versus, for instance, I'll sort of tout this on the podcast. World Magazine is an evangelical news periodical that I've been subscribing to for 15 years now. When I say it's evangelical, I don't mean they report Christian stuff. I mean they report from a Christian worldview. And so what I appreciate about them is they're reporting on all the same stuff you're going to see in Time Magazine or in The Economist or in The Atlantic or in the USA Today, but they're reporting it from a paradigm of, we believe in objective truth, we believe that there are facts that we need to get to the bottom of, and we believe it glorifies God for the truth to be revealed. And so that's their whole journalistic paradigm, is just like, hey, look, we're going to try to report the news as best we can and get to the bottom of things and put the truth before you. And I pay for a subscription to that periodical. Actually, I have a family member who consistently, like, that's their ongoing Christmas gift to me, is a renewal of that subscription, because I value that model of news that says they're not primarily making their bank off advertising revenue. It's primarily off subscription dollars that are funding journalists to cover stories with integrity. And I think there is something to that. Sorry for the long digression about the economy of how you get your news.
That one was free, everybody.
Amen.
World didn't even pay him.
As is this podcast.
Chris. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Nobody, Chris, how do you get your news? I mean, we're all on Twitter, but beyond that.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I don't really watch TV.
Yeah.
Me neither. You know, I do check out the major, you know, Fox News, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, you know.
Bill O'Reilly,
Sean Hannity, you know. So, you know, I try to, my approach has been try to go to a variety of sites. Because again, slant doesn't bother me necessarily. I mean,
you can filter the slant.
Yeah. And there's a sense where, okay, you have a worldview. Just make your world, you know.
Acknowledge it.
Yeah, acknowledge it, you know. And I think that can be a good thing. I mean, The Atlantic leans liberal.
Yeah.
But they do it in a very respectful way. You know, I think there's thoughtful ways to carry a worldview, and that's fine. And I think that I think there needs to be some level of objectivity in the facts. But at the same time, you know, nobody is neutral. Facts aren't neutral.
Yeah, there are no uninterpreted facts, as Cornelius Van Til would say. All right, so a couple final observations before we sort of land the plane here, guys. In this epistemological crisis, if maybe that's too strong a word, but in this world where, man, it's hard to tell where can I get real hard objective data and truth from, and how do I filter all the information coming at me? I just want to give a couple sort of best practices, right? A couple like, man, here's some things that we need to practice regularly. One, you need a regular fast from social media, whether that's a day a week or a day a month or a period of time during Lent or during
Advent.
Thank you, Mike,
for that right
making
now.
That connection.
On Advent.
You have to get off of social media for your own sanity and for the sake of being able to cultivate creativity. There's a book that we will discuss on a future podcast called Deep Work, which has just come out. And the author's premise is meaningful work requires sustained concentration. And what social media has done is take away our capacity for sustained concentration because we're interrupted all the time. And so you have to cultivate, if you want to do meaningful work in the world and make a difference, you have to learn to shut off distraction and focus for a long time on one task or one project. And so therefore, I think it's incumbent upon Christians to just practice that discipline of not just physical Sabbath, but mental Sabbath, energy Sabbath, turning off social media and just shutting off the flow of information coming into my life because it's endless. And when I say social media, I even mean like the Instagram photos of your friend's kids. Like, great, you can see those tomorrow. Right? If you don't comment on them right now,
no
one's going to hate you, okay? So we as Christians, I think, need to cultivate a wise and measured approach to social media rather than sort of the endless consumption of information that our culture is known for. Two, I think Christians need to be relentlessly committed to the truth. And therefore, one of the things we need to sort of see as part of our obligation in society is to push forward and put out gospel truth. Like, so if you think about on your Facebook feed, on your social media, or on your Twitter feed, whatever, is it always, I'm retweeting this article that I read here, and I'm retweeting this thing this person said over there, and I'm like, you know, I'm just like reposting other things that people have said, or is there, man, the sermon from church on Sunday, I want to put that out there. The podcast that's meaningful and helpful to people, I'll put that out there. This book that I read by an important Christian author, I'm going to recommend that to people. I'm going to use this platform and this vehicle, not just to sort of endlessly recycle information, but to push forward things that actually can be avenues for gospel truth getting into people's lives. I think that's a redemptive way that we can use media and technology. And I think the third thing is just like, and you know, I don't know, just take this for what it's worth, but taking in enough biblical truth that it begins to give me a filter, an interpretive filter for everything else I take in. One of my great concerns for our church and for my kids and for society in general is we're so awash in information that people don't read their Bible. And so when I'm not taking in God's truth, I end up being shaped by the information I am taking in. And so I just want, like for Christians especially, I want there to be as urgent a commitment to the regular intake of Scripture as there is to the regular intake of news feeds and social media and headlines and data and whatever else. Because I think that's the only way that we can avoid becoming information junkies or people who are weighed down by information overload in ways that complicate our discernment and sort of corrupt our ability to separate what's meaningful and important from what's just trivial and unimportant. And that's one of the great lessons in this whole fake news thing is just like, well, some things are meaningful and important, some things are trivial and unimportant, and we need to know the difference. Mm-hmm.
Just had breakfast with a guy in our church, young guy in his 20s. Usually when I meet with guys in their 20s and 30s and ask them what the Lord's saying to them or what the Lord's doing in their life, they'll often respond with, well, I'm really busy and I don't have a lot of time to get into the Word. But this guy, to your point, Bob, just said, you know, I got off social media a couple months ago and my times in the Bible have never been better. And I go to work, I read the Bible, I'm dating this girl, I'm renting this place. I mean, his life's just pretty stripped down and simple because he's diluted some of the information that he's taken in. And I don't think that has to be the case for everybody all the time. You just need to quit stuff. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but to your point, you do have to filter things out to get truth in.
And Bob, to piggyback off a couple points you made, I think as Christians, we need to be those who are measured and thoughtful in our response. I mean, if we have endless amounts of information and this fact coming and this tweet and this news story that it's all reactionary, you got to get the headline out. Let's push before we get the facts straight. As Christians, we need to be willing to say, okay, let's have a measured response. Let's look at the information. Let's not just immediately react, knee-jerk react, put those things out there quickly, but be thoughtful and take in and assess and analyze, okay, is this information accurate? Is this true? Do I have all the relevant data before we start making pronouncements, before we start sharing information? I think just that kind of wisdom that Proverbs speaks of just being thoughtful. And I mean, that means slowing down for a moment to think through and sort through and bring some sane biblical analysis to certain things. I think will help with what you were saying, Bob, of putting forward things that are meaningful and valuable. And we won't be caught up in a lot of ways, it's sort of a gossip that we can get away with by just retweeting and throwing these things out. And so the same sort of thoughtfulness that we would have towards avoiding gossip, maybe apply that to how we interact with news media and share information.
Amen.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context.
During Advent.
During Advent.
2 points for Chris.
During this whole Christmas season. We hope that you join us next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.